You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Wednesday morning, September 25th, 2024, 41 days till Election Day. And it's another beautiful morning to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening, across the Civic Media Radio Network, on the app, by the pod, or through social media. Thanks for starting your day right here, 50 degrees right now, here in Chippewa Falls. Coming up on the program this morning, we have this week's climate check, where Melissa Baldoff and I will talk once again about the unique and predictable view from some of Ohio Senator J.D. Vance's constituents. Because you see, they hate the Biden-Harris Inflation Reduction Act and are going to vote for Trump and Vance, but also talk about how excited they are about the money and the jobs and the economic future coming to their communities because of the Biden-Harris Inflation Reduction Act. Yeah, sometimes you wonder why we bother. In our second hour, more Wisconsin school districts are getting into the daycare business, and with good reason. Because if parents have to travel to a neighboring community to find childcare, the odds are pretty good that those kids are going to start kindergarten in that other school district as well, because you're into that habit. So we're going to talk to the superintendent for the Alma Center Humbert, Maryland School District about their unique November referendum that has a childcare option on it, but also has found a creative way for the federal government to pay for about half the construction costs. So that's coming up. Also, Up North News reporter Elizabeth Montemurro on how Donald Trump has made clear if he's back in the Oval Office, then he's back to jacking up tariffs because he thinks they're a good idea. They would just hurt Wisconsin farmers again, like they did the last time that he was in office. Along the way, if you'd like to join us, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. You can send us a text message at that number, or you can use the Civic Media app as well and reach us that way. Or if you're following us on social media, put something in the comment section. We'll see that there as well. The statewide Go for the Green or Gold Text to Win contest is also coming up just under an hour from now, where we'll give you a keyword that you text to us through the Civic Media app and to have your chance to win gold jewelry or $100 cash eat four times a day that we do that. In the daily newsletter that we put out for you over at upnorthnewswi.com is where you sign up for it. We have a story about the Midwest Rail Initiative, a group that is working toward the eventual construction of high-speed passenger rail across Wisconsin and the many benefits it will bring. And again, I use the word eventual on purpose. There will eventually be a high-speed rail network across this country. It's not like we're you don't stay in one spot. We didn't keep stagecoaches forever. You know, we eventually developed cars, and we've developed other modes of transportation, always modernizing, and high-speed passenger rail is part of that in the future. It's just that as we're waiting, it's just going to cost more when it eventually happens, but it will happen. Also in the newsletter, my story on Eric Hovde benefiting from the 2017 Trump tax giveaway to the very rich, and what would it mean if Eric Hovde were in a position in the U.S. Senate to make future decisions on whether tax breaks once again go to the very rich or to the middle class. Greg Bach is at the palatial studios of WAUK. Palatial, mostly, yeah. He's in the trailer that is WAUK's current facility. Well, it's somewhere in the middle.
All right,
of that,
all right. It's a former dentist office.
Okay, there. That's Let me try this again. I'm going to take you off camera here. Just Greg Bach is standing by at the former dentist's office. That is WAUK. Mr. Bach, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Pat. How are you this morning?
Very good. Very good. Thank you. Oh, my goodness. Did you send away for an absentee ballot?
I did.
Or do you?
Yes, okay. I did. I sent away. I should hopefully be getting mine any day now. And I can't wait to cheat and throttle and completely steal this election. No, I'm excited. I'm excited to vote early. I love voting early. I love taking part of that process. And I think it's important, and I tell people this all the time, not even in service of this show or network. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with voting on the day of. The problem is, you know, lines are long. Things happen. Before you know it, it's 7 o'clock. Polls close in an hour. You're like, I forgot to vote, or I need to vote. And I just think it's a really good idea to have an early voting plan.
It is definitely a good idea. Tony's writing on YouTube here from up in Ashland. My wife got hers yesterday. Yes, I've got mine here to be filled out as well. So I had a colleague ask yesterday, saying, you know, I don't mean to have a dumb question, but why are you all voting absentee? I just plan to vote day of. And I sent back just a series of emojis with words next to them, like a little snowflake next to weather, illness with a little sick emoji, calendar conflicts, mm-hmm. breaking news, an allergy to standing in long lines.
Car problems.
Yeah. All of these things and more. And then I got to tell her the story that I might have told here once before about how when I ran for Congress in 2012, one of the first things you have to do is spend way too much money on a private investigator to investigate you, because the people who are going to give you donations want to know that they're, you know, that you've been properly vetted. And I was in the car with my campaign manager when she got the call back, you know, a couple of weeks later or whatever. And she's like, Okay, thanks. The dirt that they found on me, she turns to me and says, did you really not vote in the 2004 presidential election? And I was like, I meant to, but... I was working at the TV station at the time, and the computer that puts up the election results on screen completely crapped out. And I was basically the only guy in the building who knew the program. So I kind of had to rebuild that and work on that computer all day. And by that time, it was time to anchor the 6 o'clock news, and then it was time to anchor, you know, election results. And so I never did get up to vote. And that was a lesson to me. That voting early when you can, because you just never know what's going to come up on election day.
I agree.
Yeah. So, and Tony says that his wife is most excited to be marked as someone who already voted and then doesn't get calls from candidates anymore. Yes, that is very true. If you've done that, and then you can help other people and either help them vote early or convince them to go vote on November 5th. So yeah, myvote.wi.gov to get more information about that. Now, there is a problem with some ballots in Madison that I'm about here briefly and talk about the safeguards behind them. Because up to 2,000 voters in Madison were sent duplicate absentee ballots. However, none of the duplicates have been sent in. All the affected voters were contacted, and there are multiple safeguards in place to ensure that only one ballot is counted. What happened is, and just about anybody who's worked in an office can relate to this, a mail merge. When you go to print the labels or to print the envelopes, somehow or another, the database was sent twice, and so two files were merged together with double the names and addresses. About 2,000 of those duplicate ballots in one ward were mailed last week, and then the mistake was caught. But here's the thing. Even if the two ballots were to get out and to be coming back, they have a unique barcode on it, you know, for the household, and only the first one will be counted because that's the barcode that will be scanned. And again, it doesn't say who you voted for. It is that you voted. And once that ballot is scanned, the voter is marked in the poll book as having submitted an absentee ballot. And then there are further safeguards. If they were to come into the polling place, they again would be marked as already having voted. So I get that all out there from the get-go because, of course, we right away already have Republican politicians talking about, you know, that there's some kind of hanky-panky going on with the election. And I, again, was very thankful that we have somebody like Ann Jacobs on the Wisconsin Elections Commission, who right away got on her Twitter machine and talked all about the safeguards that are in place for just this kind of thing. This is why we have more than 1,800 wonderful local elections clerks who take elections seriously and in a bipartisan manner. Meanwhile, we've got Republicans either making up stuff about elections or trying to make things harder. And we talked last week about the Dodge County Sheriff essentially verbally strong-arming every local clerk into not allowing for absentee drop boxes. And that was bad enough. And I didn't think we were going to top that. And we've topped it in Wausau. We've topped it where the new conservative mayor, who won back in April, took it upon himself to move the drop box outside of City Hall. How do we know this? He took photos of himself. He's in a shirt and tie and he put on a Department of Public Works jacket and a helmet. And he's got the ballot drop box on a cart that he's wheeling into City Hall. The city clerk is livid. And there are other city officials that, frankly, say they wouldn't be surprised if you know this was referred for criminal charges or an ethics violation. But the new mayor there, Doug Denny, I believe his name is, says, well, the residents that he talked to don't feel that ballot boxes are safe and that there's a lack of clarity in the Wisconsin Supreme Court decision that made ballot drop boxes legal. But again, for him, much like the Dodge County Sheriff, to the mayor, that's not your job. You are not God of local elections administration. And that God complex needs to go away, and it needs to go away now because we're going into a very dark place with voting rights in the state.
I don't know about you, Pat, but I know that most legislators do things when they just talk to a few people. You talk to a few people, we just change all the laws, change everything because I talked to a few people. And yeah, they were scared, they were nervous. That's how we do things nowadays.
And I wish you were joking, but it's not. Look, this is not quite, you know, George Wallace standing in the schoolhouse door, but this is the mayor of Wausau at the front door of City Hall, taking away a drop box unilaterally, and again attacking your freedom. In this case, the freedom to vote conveniently. More after this. You're up north. Such a good song by a group called the Ides of March called Vehicle. And you'd think, boy, a group like that, they must have had a string of hits in the early 1970s. But nay, they were one-hit wonders. And one-hit wonders will be the theme of our history lesson coming up just 30 minutes from now. It's coming up on 6:22 here on Up North News Radio. The Brewers notched a 7-2 win over the Pittsburgh Pirates last night. All right, I'm going to throw a lot of numbers at you, but the numbers mean the team is doing real good. Willie Adames now has his first ever 30-20 season after stealing his 20th base to go along with 32 home runs. So a 30-20 season. So when you pair him up with 20-year-old rookie Jackson Churio, who currently has 21 homers and 21 stolen bases, what you have is the first ever time that Brewers teammates have had a 20-20 season in the same season. So we have a pair of 20-20s, although Willie Adames is actually a 30-20, which is certainly not like Ichiro with his, or not Ichiro, Shohei Ohtani, sorry, with a 50-50 season, okay? But 30-20, nothing to sneeze at. 20-20 at the age of 20, It's pretty darn good. Having two people on your team with 2020 seasons, well, that's just A-okay. Oh, wait, those aren't numbers. I love the look on Greg's face. Like, he's trying to do the math on all of this. He's got his finger up and you carry the two on, and then on. Do this. And
I've contacted my representative on this matter.
It was my understanding that there would be no math.
So, are we doing well?
Yeah, we're doing well. Well, here's more numbers. The Brewers are now at 90-67. They have 90 wins in consecutive seasons for only the second time ever in team history. They did so in 1978-79. So not since then have we have back-to-back 90-win seasons. Oh, back to Willie Adames, more numbers. He's now got 111 runs batted in. So he is fourth in the majors for ribbies. So to answer your question, Greg, team's doing real good.
How are we doing on that number to get us out of the bye week?
That number, not so good. Okay. Still chasing the Dodgers and the Phils.
Okay. Well, you know,
But we get to watch the Brewers play at Pittsburgh again today, 5:40. And the pregame is at 5:05 on some Civic Media stations. And then tomorrow's game, first pitch, is at 11:35 a.m.
Woo!
So a little late morning baseball for you as the regular season starts to wrap up here. Vice President Kamala Harris told Wisconsin Public Radio on Monday that she supports ending the filibuster to restore Roe v. Wade and to protect abortion rights nationally. She said that in a interview that aired yesterday, we need to get to the point where 51 votes would be what we need to actually put back in law the protections for reproductive freedom and the ability of every person and every woman to make decisions about their own body and not have the government tell them what to do. In 2022, as vice president, Harris said she supported ending the filibuster to protect reproductive rights and voting rights. When she first ran for president in 2019, she said she would support ending the filibuster to pass environmental legislation. That would be for, some people call it, the Green New Deal. The filibuster, for the uninitiated, it can be an attempt to delay or block a vote for a piece of legislation. And it happens if you can determine that a bill must have 60 votes to pass the Senate instead of 51. But here's the thing. The filibuster is, you'll find it nowhere in the Constitution. You'll find it nowhere in the original Congress. The filibuster basically is not a real thing. It shouldn't be a real thing. It was made up in the late 1800s and should be taken back out because it was that filibuster that blocked civil rights legislation for decades. And it's that filibuster that has blocked common sense, widely supported gun safety laws. Even when it got something like 57, 58 votes after Sandy Hook, but because it didn't get to 60, it didn't pass. So maybe the deal there is we should just get rid of the filibuster entirely, which, Greg, the proof that that might be a good idea is that West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, clutching his pearls, says, oh, if Kamala Harris wants to get rid of the filibuster, I will not endorse her for president, said the one-time alleged Democrat. He called the filibuster the holy grail of democracy. Senator Manchin, sit down.
Okay. I feel, I promise I will make this connect. I feel like the filibuster should be like the old walking rule in baseballs, where you can't just like make a motion to the umpire and let the guy walk. You got to throw four balls and let that happen. If you want a filibuster, you got to stand up there and talk until you can't talk anymore. You can't just be like, we're going to filibuster. And no, if you want that filibuster, it has to be old school and difficult.
I could go for that.
Yeah,
if you really you want to try to talk a bill to death, give it a go. But this arbitrary 60 vote thing, no.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Joe Manchin. So,
meanwhile, that's how I know. If Joe Manchin's against it, then I am for it. Tammy Baldwin, also no stranger to Senate procedures, has said in the past that she is amenable to budget earmarks, which were taken away for a while and then reformed and restored, as they should have been. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel this morning is up with a story about Eric Hovde's stance on earmarks is still a little bit unclear. And I just wanted to say my little spiel on earmarks, having been a legislator and asked for them in the state budget. The problem with earmarks isn't that they exist. They are as old as the country itself. The problem was always when there was no transparency in the earmark. If you're going to make a request in the budget and say, like I did in my first budget, that I want $200,000 to go into it for the city of Chippewa Falls to, you know, mitigate flooding downtown, and now there's a lovely downtown park there, but it's got my name on it, and it's like I asked for that, and if folks didn't like it, you know, they could remember that on election day. What we don't need are secret earmarks. So that was one way to reform earmarks. Another way is what we're going to talk about on the other side of this break. And that would involve having more public-private partnerships where you have the private sector and part of the decision-making process in terms of what they want to invest in with help from the government. So if you really want to see earmark reform, then you're going to like what's in the Inflation Reduction Act. And we're going to talk about that with Melissa Baldoff in our climate check coming up next. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
6:34, welcome back to Up North News Radio. On this Wednesday morning, time for our weekly climate check with Melissa Baldoff. Melissa, how are you? How was the rest of your trip to the desert Southwest?
It was actually lovely. Not quite as hot as it could have been. It was a balmy low 90s for most of the time I was there, which was a pleasant surprise because I was expecting and fearing that it was going to be well over 100. So a pleasant surprise that it wasn't quite as bad as it could have been.
When the 90s are relief, you know, that's when you know something is out of whack here. All right. Well, we're, of course, deep into political season, and you're seeing that kind of behavior everywhere, including, of course, the U.S. Capitol. And the Inflation Reduction Act and the energy provisions that were approved in it when Democrats controlled Congress a couple of years back was the focus of a hearing by the Republicans on the House Budget Committee. The title of the hearing was, quote, "The Cost of the Biden-Harris Energy Crisis." I mean, is there anything else that screams bad faith than to hold a so-called oversight hearing, you know, where they've already told you what the verdict is going to be? It just, you understand why people don't think much of Congress when this is the kind of stuff they do.
I mean, they might as well just have a committee called Bad Faith Committee, right? I mean, we see a number of these, you know, sham hearings that are, you know, just a vehicle for opportunities to, you know, create these, you know, false messages that they want to advance. But, you know, at the same time, you know, we have these incredibly talented and brilliant humans that are armed with these things called facts. Ooh. And this stuff called science. Ooh. That are quite often able to come in to these hearings be able to deliver the truth and deliver facts and talk about what's really going on. Despite the efforts of Republicans to, frame things in the, frame these false narratives.
Right. I mean, it's just all, you know, political games, political theater. And look, I'm not saying Congress has to be, like a student council at a middle school, but it seems to me that you can dial it down a notch and say, let's have a hearing about, you know, the current state of energy programs and what we want to do next. You know, find out where we disagree. Maybe we have some common ground because we've already established, Melissa, that there are conservatives who actually understand the climate crisis and want to work on it. But instead, when you dress it up as the cost of the Biden-Harris energy crisis, I mean, you're kind of giving away the game. But to your point, it was great to see that, look, if you're going to have the hearing and witnesses are going to come in, you did have witnesses who talked about all the many ways that the Biden-Harris administration has actually unleashed, you know, a jobs revolution in clean energy, and all of the investments that are not all government investments. You know, it's that signal to the private sector, hey, you want to be partners in this? And Melissa, there's every indication the private sector is saying, yeah, we want to partner with you on all these cool things.
This is really some pretty incredible data that we're seeing that backs up that the, you know, that the Inflation Reduction Act is, you know, is living up to its name. We've heard quite a bit over the past couple of years. I would say not enough, unfortunately, about what a successful presidency Joe Biden has had in terms of not just recovering from the damage that Donald Trump did, recovering from the COVID crisis, but really leading in terms of creating jobs, growing our economy, and then, you know, passing this, you know, historic piece of legislation to invest in our future. And what we're seeing now from the Inflation Reduction Act is, you know, this investment in the middle class that is growing the economy through slowing inflation, grocery price inflation in particular, seeing data that it has slowed by 93%. Wages have risen by 8.5%, outpacing inflation. Total employment has grown 4%. Economic output is up 10%. This is a very strong record for the president and an incredible accomplishment, especially when you contrast it with what was happening previously. So when you hear Donald Trump, when you hear Republicans saying, oh, well, you know, who, we want to go back and are people better off than they were 4 years ago? Well, absolutely they are, because you have things like this that are happening. We are better off than we were 4 years ago. And part of that is because of the Inflation Reduction Act.
Right. If we look just at the investments here at this point, you know, that there's been more than $370 billion invested in energy projects that help combat climate change. That has triggered $100 billion in private investment and roughly 100,000 new jobs in clean energy manufacturing. Because, again, the private sector already sees the future, and they see the future in EVs. They see it in, you know, heat pumps. They see it in wind and solar. And they want to see a government that is looking in the future and not trying to somehow drag everybody back to the past where, you know, we're all going to have a shovel some coal into the basement to, you know, stick into the furnace. I mean, it really makes you wonder. We keep hearing the criticisms from Republicans about the Inflation Reduction Act, but, you know, drill baby drill is not, it's not even real. It's not even a real policy. We already lead the world in energy production. So, honestly, what's the alternative?
Right. We're not hearing an alternative. We're not hearing from Republicans, what can we do that would have an equal positive impact? Because they don't have anything that would have an equal positive impact, not just in terms of the environment, because we obviously know they don't, but in terms of the economy either. They don't have a plan that is going to be able to create the kind of jobs that we are talking about in this clean energy economy that we're seeing, that is going to have the kind of investment into the communities that we're seeing. And we're seeing these investments not just in large cities, but in rural economies, you know, in small communities all over the country. I mean, there are low-income communities that are seeing these manufacturing investments, places that have been left behind, have felt left behind are seeing these opportunities really return to those communities. And we're not hearing a plan from Republicans that says, hey, well, we don't like your idea, but we have a different idea that could do just as well by these communities, because they don't have that idea. They don't have any ideas that can say, hey, we know that your electric bill is expensive. We know that the gas bill is expensive come wintertime. They don't have any plan that is saying to people, here's how we can help you save hundreds of dollars every year, thousands of dollars every year on your utility bill. They don't have that plan, but they just don't like this one. So yeah, it's a real contrast in who is working for people and working to help save money for families in the immediate term and create opportunities for families, farmers, you know, entrepreneurs, small businesses in the future.
So recently there was an interview on PBS, and one of the folks interviewed was Jack Connes, a policy analyst at the Energy Innovation Policy and Technology. It's a nonpartisan research and analysis firm. And he underscored the whole notion of that, you know, these public sector investments invite private sector money to come in and help with job creation. And I liked the way that he framed something that sounds like the Republican criticism of, you know, well, where's all this stuff that you said was coming? And his line was, you can't turn on a $1 billion factory overnight. You know, that when you see a new home under construction, you might walk by it for weeks or months and it might feel like very little progress is being made. But once it's built, you see that it's going to be there for decades and decades. And those are the investments we're seeing through the bipartisan infrastructure law, through the CHIPS and Science Act, and certainly through the Inflation Reduction Act. And when you're committing that kind of investment for the long run, as government is through the Inflation Reduction Act, you see that private sector confidence that says, yes, over time, we're going to continue to do our part as well to create all these new jobs.
Right. Absolutely. And I thought another thing that he pointed out that really resonated is that the private market, they are engaging in this clean energy economy. And, you know, they're choosing where to invest. You know, they're coming in, they're deciding where to create these jobs, and they're happening everywhere, right? You know, the Inflation Reduction Act isn't saying, oh, we're only going to create jobs in Democratic states and only in the states, you know, of the legislators who voted for this bill.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Remember how much we heard that, oh, government shouldn't pick winners and losers. Well, this is the very definition of how you do that. The private sector is applying for the funds that are out there, and you don't have, you know, the old bridge to nowhere stuff where Congressman so-and-so wants this project. So again, if you're on the conservative side of the spectrum here, you should really like the way that this is unfolding, because again, the choices are being made by and large at a private sector investment level with support from the government, so that jobs are getting created.
You know, this is really that opportunity for everyone to win. And what's not to love there?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's happening everywhere. It's even happening in Ohio, the home of Senator J.D. Vance. And there was a great article in The Guardian recently all about Middletown, Ohio, the city that was the origin story of J.D. Vance, and, you know, how he's called the Biden-Harris climate legislation a scam. And yet, you know, the big steel plant in the middle of town is going to get new life because of $500 million in funding that was made available through the Inflation Reduction Act. And, you know, it just makes you wonder, Melissa, in these districts and others, how much longer they could possibly live in denial. I mean, does he really think that plant's going to open up the old-fashioned way? I think he'd be wise to, you know, embrace the new energy economy out there.
You know, this is really something when you hear about this, when you have J.D. Vance saying that the Inflation Reduction Act is, quote, dumb, does nothing for the environment and will make us all poorer. And it's a, quote, green energy scam that's actually shipped a lot more manufacturing jobs to China. And then you contrast that with the people in his community, one of whom said, a pastor in town who had worked at the plant for 30 years, who said, quote, it felt like a miracle, an answered prayer that we weren't going to be left to die on the vine.
You know what I liked? I liked that they talked to the Republican mayor of a nearby town, and he talked about how happy he is to have this investment coming in. He said nothing else was going to come in to an empty floodplain and produce for the people in our town. He says, quote, I'm happy to use the IRA, but if I had a national role, my view might be different. I mean, printing money and giving it away to people won't solve inflation. It will make it worse. This just kills me, Melissa. He is right there telling you that, well, if it were me, I wouldn't do it, but you're doing it, so I'll take the money, even though I'm completely wrong about it contributing to inflation. This is actually what's going to save jobs and the local economy. The disconnect sometimes is stunning, but at least he knows. At least he knows it's good for his town. So it's on that dichotomy that we're going to end this week's Climate Check. Appreciate the update, as always. Melissa Baldoff, thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
We'll be back with more after this. You're up north. You can't hold it. It's electric. Boogie, woogie, woogie. But you know it's there. Hair that I'm everywhere.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train. When I was feeling near as faded as my jeans.
This, of course, is Janis Joplin. She recorded the song Me and Bobby McGee at the Sunset Sound Studios in Hollywood. And 9 days later, she had died from a drug overdose at the age of 27. The song and her entire body of work lives on. Janis Joplin again this day in 1970. Melissa Kay from WFHR WIRI is with us now. Melissa, hello. Hello, how are you?
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. It's lovely to be here.
It's lovely to have you here. What's new in radio world in the Wisconsin Rapids area? I mean, we've been hearing this tease about a Melissa Kay extravaganza radio program.
I have to tell you, I did my first round of interviews with students at a school in our district here yesterday, and I get to go do the second round today, and these kids are going to be awesome. I can't wait.
Well, that's a reflection on you, because students are not the easiest interviews. You know, you get a lot of, fine.
Well, and there's a little bit of that, I'm sure, but you know, this was optional for them to sign up for. And they chose to do it. So,
and I sense you are very good at getting information and stories out of them. And
I hope so. It's going to be fun. They've got great stories to share.
That's great. Let's see. Let's head to the history lesson on this day in 2017. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers played their final concert at the Hollywood Bowl. It was the last stop on their 40th anniversary tour because Tom Petty would die a week later. Boy, we're just filled with happy news in today's history lesson,
aren't
we?
So uplifting.
Good Lord.
I know. All right, here we go. I got something uplifting. On this day in 1974, Dr. Frank Job performs the first ulnar collateral ligament replacement surgery.
Ooh.
Okay,
and then
baseball
he died 5 days later.
Stop it, Greg.
We know it as Tommy John surgery because the patient on the table that day was baseball player Tommy John, and it has revolutionized pitching for good or for bad, depending on your point of view. So that first Tommy John surgery on Tommy John this day 50 years ago.
It's the first Chicago. How they got their names too? Those types different surgeries.
Well, his mom named him Tommy. You see, and. I know. Like, how did, talk about bad luck, Lou Gehrig catching Lou Gehrig's disease. I mean, well, how do these things happen?
How does that happen?
Tommy John, it was either going to be Tommy John or his name was actually going to be ulnar collateral ligament replacement surgery. I guess it was a family name. I don't know.
I guess.
Yeah, so. It was a toss up, man. That was a hard one.
The first Chicago Marathon was run this day in 1977. Got a lot of birthdays today. Will Smith turns 56.
You didn't give me music for them.
Just the two of us. We can make it if we try.
Did you say Will Smith or did? Oh, I'm sorry. I heard the wrong name in my head. Oh, here we go. I was looking at one name and you. Okay.
I'm looking. I'm trying to figure out whose name did you think I was looking at over here? Jim West, Desperado. Okay, anyway, Will Smith is 56 today.
This is a good movie. I really like this movie.
Oh, you're the one.
No, I love this movie. I would not call myself a Will Smith fan anymore, but I really like the movie. Michael Douglas turns 80 years old today.
Wow.
On his 25th birthday, a baby girl was born who would go on to become his wife. Yes, he and his wife, Catherine Zeta-Jones, share the same birthday. Hers wasn't 80 years ago. It was 55 years ago. Happy 55th to her. Cheryl Teagues is 77 years old today. Anson Williams, Potsy from Happy Days, is 75. And Luke Skywalker, Mark Hamill, is 73 years old today. T.I. is 44 years old today. This is one of his two big songs in the year 2008, along with Live Your Life. The late actor Christopher Reeve was born this day in 1952, passed away in 2004. Heather Locklear is 63. Donald Glover is 40 years old today. Now, on the national day calendar, this is National Binge Day, like binge-watching programs. But I don't understand why it's September 25th. For me, I would make it January 1st. Back when the girl still lived with us, January 1st was like binge watching day. We'd pick something and we'd go straight through it. But I don't know. Either one of you binge something lately, or is that a fad that's come and gone?
I don't have time to do anything like that.
We binge watched the reboot of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. We watched that.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Okay.
Yeah. We started watching an episode, then we. A season and a half in, we're like, oh God, we have things to do.
It's National Comic Book Day, National Cooking Day, National Daughters Day, National Food Service Workers Day, National Lobster Day, National Quesadilla Day, World Pharmacist Day, Women's Health and Fitness Day. And I raced through all those because I got one more that I want to cover. And in fact, Roger brought it up first with a comment saying today is National One Hit Wonder Day. Woo-hoo. And so I thought, and maybe you guys have a favorite one-hit wonder artist, but this is something that we used to talk about, you know, in like the 70s and 80s, like Gloria Gaynor's I Will Survive, Gloria Gaynor, a one-hit wonder. Tony Basil, Mickey, Jennifer Page in the 90s with Crush. Bowling for Soup had 1985 and no chart hits after that, or Foster the People with Pumped Up Kicks.
Oh, yeah.
Jet, Are You Gonna Be My Girl?
I think they had two hits.
Maybe it didn't hit the top 40 of the top one. Maybe they were on the Billboard 100. Capital City, Safe and Sound. Now, some of them shouldn't really count. Like, they list Derek and the Dominoes for Layla. But if you're a super group, you know, Eric Clapton's had a few hits, you know, since those days.
Yeah, that shouldn't count.
And Roger mentions two top 10 hits that had English versions on one side and German on the other. There was Nena's 99 Luftballons and Peter Schilling's Major Tom.
Wow.
So, Does this spark any one-hit wonder favorites from you, Melissa? Or was this just a nice list to go through?
Is Call Me Maybe a one-hit wonder?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah, what's her?
Carly Rae Jepsen? Another hit.
Carly Rae Jepsen. No, totally. Yeah.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.